Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Colonel Douglas McGregor, a decorated combat veteran and author of four books. McGregor was commissioned into the United States Army in 1976 after 1 year at the Virginia Military Institute and 4 years at West Point. He served in the Gulf War, leading the largest tank battle since World War II. McGregor has testified as an expert witness on national security issues before the House Armed Services Committee and the House Foreign Relations Committee. And he has an article at Counterpunch, Epitaph for a Four-Star, The Petraeus Saga. Welcome to Background Briefing, Douglas McGregor.
Hey, good to be with you.
And there's been so much adulation of General Petraeus in the press, and he, of course, cultivated the press rather assiduously. In fact, at his headquarters, not only did he have a special room for the woman that turned out to be his lover, but he also hosted people like Max Boot, who have written very, very sycophantic articles, many of them out as we speak, about the general. So it's fairly rare to hear anybody say anything about him that might be perhaps closer to the truth. And that's why I'm talking to you, because you obviously are somewhat demystifying this man.
Well, I'd say that's the understatement. You know, the neocons obviously dominated the media. The media, the mainstream media, that is, aligned itself ideologically with the neocons and their desire to intervene in these Muslim countries with the object of changing the Middle East. And Petraeus became their poster boy. You know, that's a good way to sum it up. And as a result, anything he did was justified, and anything he said was rewarded in the press with the kind of flattery that you described. The truth is that Dave Petraeus is someone very different from, I think, what the American people perceive.
And tell me why.
Well, I think Dave Petraeus is someone who was always extremely ambitious, desperate to advance in the Army, but that's not unusual. But he graduated from the military academy, and he promptly married the daughter of a four-star, which is analogous to taking out an insurance policy against anything seriously wrong happening to you, at least for the first, you know, 10, 15, 20 years of your career. And if you play your cards right, as he obviously did, you can leverage that for advancement. And he pursued the usual jobs, aide-de-camp, military assistant, executive officer. He became the aide-de-camp to General Galvin, who was then a division commander as a captain. Cultivated Galvin heavily, co-wrote articles with him advancing some of Galvin's notions of light-heavy forces. Became very quickly later on, after he went to graduate school and arrived in the Department of Social Sciences, an advocate for the use of American force in Latin America at the time. Many of your listeners will remember that we had the Sandinista problem in Nicaragua, and there were lots of people in and out of uniform talking about the use of forces, American ground forces, primarily light infantry, to intervene in that country. And Petraeus was someone who was very much part of that. And he went from the Department of Social Sciences right back to General Galvin, who by then had become a four-star and became his special assistant. And within a year of leaving General Galvin at Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers Europe, as a special assistant, he ends up as the aide-de-camp to the Army Chief of Staff, General Vono, which is where he spent his time as the Chief of Staff's aide during Desert Storm. So this is someone who was very familiar with all of the top generals, someone who ingratiated himself to the senior leaders, someone who never heard anything from a senior officer with which he could not immediately agree, someone who anxiously and enthusiastically reinforced whatever his superior said. In effect, a very articulate and effective yes man in the most serious sense of the word. He doesn't have any exposure to direct fire combat all through the 1990s and ends up as a two-star general, division commander of the 101st in 2003, and turns out to be a very disappointing commander. This was someone who did not move his division quickly. On the contrary, the division was very slow to deploy. When forces began to arrive in Kuwait and ultimately move towards Iraq, Petraeus was noteworthy for his reluctance to close with the enemy and fight. He was one of the naysayers, one of those who kept singing the song of doom and despair, arguing that we needed more forces before we advanced on Baghdad, arguing for more bombing. He was one of the co-architects of the use of our Apache aircraft in a quote-unquote deep battle, something left over from the Soviet period against the Iraqis, which turned out so badly when they flew over a lighted city at low altitude and were shot to pieces, unsurprisingly, by the way. So this is someone who was steeped in army orthodoxy, whatever the conventional wisdom was, always migrated to the point of consensus, supporting again whatever the senior generals thought, reinforcing those thoughts. This is not a dynamic, independent character. This is not someone who is naturally aggressive and sets himself apart as someone who's willing to take enormous risks, on the contrary. So after Baghdad falls in record time, and we take almost no losses in the process, Petraeus is in a very difficult position. But he finds his opportunity with Paul Wolfowitz, who comes and visits him in northern Iraq, where the 101st is now in an occupation mode, and convinces Wolfowitz that he can be a great nation builder and an advocate for the neocon policy of societal transformation through occupation, of transforming Muslim Arabs into Anglo-Saxon Democrats. And not long after, he becomes the leader of the new movement to create a new Iraqi armed force, a new Iraqi army. And of course, that has all sorts of problems involving the loss of thousands, hundreds of thousands of weapons, almost $1 billion. And we don't need to go into that detail, but that doesn't seem to make any difference. On the contrary, Rumsfeld seems to welcome that. And Petraeus makes himself the indispensable advocate for everything that Rumsfeld, Bush, Wolfowitz, Cheney, and the rest want to do in Iraq, and for that matter, everywhere else. And so from that point forward, the press lines up to flatter, adulate for Petraeus. And it works, and Petraeus becomes his larger-than-life figure, when in reality the true picture behind the scenes is very different. And that's what I try to outline in this short Counterpunch article, so that people understand that today this Iraq, which Petraeus claimed to be doing so many good things for and sacrificing over 1,000 American lives during this thing called the surge, spending hundreds of millions of dollars to buy off our adversaries and help Bush get reelected, this Iraq is today effectively an Iranian satellite. No one outside of the United States questions that. And increasingly, I think the American people are well aware that Baghdad is now dominated thoroughly by Tehran, not Washington, D.C. The lion's share of the oil has not come to American oil companies. On the contrary, it's gone to Chinese and other foreign companies that had no role in the occupation. And the situation in northern Iraq with the Kurds is extremely tense, and most observers have concluded that Iraq is the next battleground on the Syrian model, where the Sunni Islamists will attempt to retake control of Baghdad and Arab Iraq from Iran. So this alleged achievement is in fact just that. It's an alleged achievement. It's a disaster. It's a strategic catastrophe. And Afghanistan is equally disappointing and equally wasteful. And the American people, I think, again, instinctively understand it. But in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the editorial pages continue to laud what we've done as something good, when in fact it's something very bad.
Again, I'm speaking with Colonel Douglas McGregor, who is a decorated combat veteran and author of four books. He has testified as an expert witness on national security issues before the House Armed Services Committee and the House Foreign Relations Committee, and has an article at Counterpunch, Epitaph for a Four-Star, The Petraeus Saga. So there's no question that the neocons and George W. Bush ended up handing Iraq over to Iran. In fact, if that war was about oil, then Iran now basically controls not only their oil, but it's the second biggest deposit in the world, Iraq's as well. So they have the potential of eclipsing Saudi Arabia. And of course, there is a surrogate war going on between the Saudis and the Gulf, and,
yes,
and over that very issue, I'm sure. This is, I recall the Israeli military historian Martin Van Creewald described the Iraq War as the greatest strategic blunder since Emperor Augustus sends his legions into Germany in 9 AD. That may well be an understatement.
Well, strategically, he's right. But fortunately, we didn't lose all of our legions.
That's true. But isn't it true that Petraeus essentially pulls Bush's irons out of the fire? The surge is really just a piece of political camouflage to make it look like the Iraq War wasn't the complete disaster that it was.
Well, I think so. I think it was clearly the determination to crush whatever Sunni Islamists and criminals that we could not bring on side with cash in downtown and suburban Baghdad was clearly an effort to create the illusion that something good had happened and to help George Bush get reelected, to effectively take Iraq off the table, to dramatically reduce the numbers of American casualties. In so doing, a lot of people, I was by no means the only one, there were lots of people in and out of uniform who said, look, you're going to end up installing Iranian national strategic power in Baghdad. You're helping Iran's allies on the ground in Iraq. But that was irrelevant. The point was, I think, to get Bush reelected, to create the illusion, and Petraeus was rewarded for this.
So his Bush's successor seems to have also been beguiled by Petraeus. And Obama, of course, set himself up for the Afghan war, saying that we took our eye off the ball and he would do it better. And I take it that Petraeus told him there's a better way to do it. And then they had surge number two. And what did that achieve?
Well, it got a lot of Americans killed. And it killed thousands upon thousands of Afghan citizens. It changed nothing, and in fact, you can say that in a perverse sort of way, the Taliban has actually thrived under attack. The result is that as we depart, Afghanistan will be divided. It will be largely dominated by the Pashtun tribes that have been fighting us. But again, there was an unwillingness to recognize that Al-Qaeda was no longer the issue inside Afghanistan, that we were fighting people who fought us because we were there. The Pashtun were by no means enemies of the United States. They hadn't attacked anyone. They hadn't mounted any terrorist attacks against us or the British or anyone else. And they don't fight anywhere but inside Afghanistan. These points again were made, but it was not in Petraeus' interest to come to terms with that. I think he, at that point, had begun to believe his own press releases. He was, so to say, drinking his own Kool-Aid.
So just in closing then, Colonel Douglas McGregor, obviously this is a conversation that's not being had, and Petraeus may have fallen from grace over this somewhat soap operatic dalliance. Do you think that there will be a reckoning of the record, or is this, I mean, a lot of people are now saying what they're covering up is what happened in Benghazi and that somehow he's taking the fall.
Well, we don't know. Perhaps we'll find out, perhaps we won't, but I'm sure you and most of your listeners understand that the FBI does not investigate government officials because of extramarital affairs, unless the other individual involved in the affair is a foreign agent. That was not the case. That's not the issue. I suspect there's something much deeper and more profound. But, of course, I don't know, and none of us does. Maybe we'll find out. But in any case, I think Petraeus is so to say, out of the running now for anything else that he may have thought he wanted to do. He has harmed himself.
Well, Colonel McGregor, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Colonel Douglas McGregor, a decorated combat veteran and author of four books. He was commissioned in the United States Army in 1976 after 1 year at the Virginia Military Institute and 4 years at West Point. He served in the Gulf War, leading the largest tank battle since World War II, and has testified as an expert witness on national security issues before the House Armed Services Committee and the House Foreign Relations Committee. He has an article at Counterpunch, Epitaph for a Four-Star, The Petraeus Saga. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.